Join me, Jacqueline Coley, on a brand new podcast, Seen on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that shape them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on the Screen is available now. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. I am your host for this week anyway, Mark Ellis. I am joined by my esteemed co-host, as always, the delightful, the choosy, but she's making the right decisions when it comes to the things that we talk about off camera, which range from sports to attraction. We talk about a lot of stuff here in the studio. That's Jacqueline Coley. Next to her is a star in her own right. Her movie comes out, has been out now on video on demand for a little bit now, after a great theatrical run and doing a lot of the festivals, all that circuit. Always Lola's the movie. She's the co-founder of the World Girls Empire. She's one of my dear friends. Roxy Stryer is here.
Yeah.
And this is just so exciting that we get to talk about a movie that really is just a bunch of fluff and cake and nothing too deep. So now we get to know each other a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. My first time seeing this movie. I did it just for the show, just for you guys. You're welcome.
This was your first time seeing New Year's Eve, the 2011 classic?
The classic. It was my first time. And I will say it shocked me. it truly shocked me. It was a wild experience.
It was a surprising film for Roxy. We're going to get into our thoughts about that. Now, again, this is part of the, I guess you could say, trilogy of Gary Marshall holiday movies that, you know, Gary Marshall, the legendary director who, you know, at the tail end of his career is just, I like working with these people and we don't need a big premise. We're just going to make a lot of storylines out of this, whether it's on Valentine's Day, which was the first one. And then we got New Year's Eve. Yep. And then a few years later, we got Mother's Day. And so we have this trilogy of movies that are just, it's kind of like Love Actually, where it's just a bunch of storylines all going zigging and zagging and all over the place. And where did it land? 7% rotten.
Yeah.
7% on the tomato meter. Now, again, for those of you listening to maybe this show or watch us for the first time, welcome. The tomato meter goes up to 100. So 7 out of 100, not the best. And it did do better with the audience. Mm. It's 45%, which is still rotten. There's no freshness anywhere for any of these movies on the tomato meter or the audience score. The highest that we get is 47% for the audience score of Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So, Roxy, let me ask you, because I know Jacqueline has, either by her own free will or her job, has had to see all three of these movies.
Yes.
Have you seen any of these? Did you see Valentine's Day or Mother's Day?
No, which is kind of bizarre for me because I tend to like, for lack of better words, trash. Mm. And that's what I had heard was going on with this trilogy. And this trilogy, you know, there's Star Wars. There's
all
this.
The great, you know, there's Back to the Future and then there's the holidays.
Amazing yep. trilogy. But I love Love Actually. And that's what, when you think about the posters for these movies, if you were ever sitting at a bus stop, you would look up and just see the star-studded cast of these. And it is enticing because you look yeah. and you're like, those are 17 of my favorite actors of all time, all in the same movie. I think that I just never ended up seeing them because probably the tomato meter. Is this the lowest ranking movie you guys have ever done on the show?
No, we've done like a zero, haven't we?
We've done.
There's a zero?
We might have done a couple zeros, but
it's been a while.
It's getting down to 7% is impressive. Like that's actually a feat of strength in some weird through the looking glass kind of way. It's very, especially when you talk about the star power involved with this movie. Like, I'm just going to read some names for you kids, okay? Let's start with Halle Berry, Jessica Biel, Abigail Breslin, Ludacris, Matthew Broderick, Robert De Niro, Josh Duhamel, Hector Elizondo, Cary Elwes, Carl Gugino, Catherine Heigl, Ashton Kutcher. It goes on and on and on. And it lands with, of course, Jon Bon Jovi's in it. So that's why Back when Christian Harloff and I were doing Schmoes No, we saw this movie because we were going to review it, and also it had JBJ in it. And I support any film endeavor John Bon Jovi does, whether it's vampires or whether it's the classic. And I mean that actual classic, Young Guns 2.
Yeah, I mean, Young Guns 2, obviously. How many Oscar winners we have on here? We have Hallie, we have...
I think there's four Oscar winners.
Is there four Oscar winners on here? Yeah, because we have Hallie... We have
Hilary Swank.
Hilary Swank. Oscar winner.
Yes. I'm like, Hilary Swank.
Did Michelle Pfeiffer ever win anything?
She was nominated for an Oscar, but I don't believe she's won. And Robert De Niro has won one.
You're forgetting a musical one. Two musical ones, actually.
What?
Because Common won
John
an Oscar.
Lithgow? Yes.
And John Bon Jovi was nominated
for an Oscar. That's correct.
For Lithgow must have won,
too.
Right?
Yeah.
No? What's that?
John Lithgow never won anything?
No.
A lot of these people should have. Abigail Breslin was nominated. John Lithgow should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Orange County. You haven't seen that movie, Brian, put it on the list for next year. Producer Brian's going to put Orange County, the comedy.
It's
really funny. This movie is like a comedy. It's a drama. It's got a little bit of everything. And so, you know, I sit down to watch this, and I'm kind of like ready to get wrapped up in one of the storylines, if not multiple, because I forgot a lot of the goings on. All I knew is that it took place primarily in Times Square on New Year's Eve. We go so many different places from there, which we'll get into with movie talk. But let me start with our esteemed guest, Roxy Stryer. 7% on the tomato meter. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
You know, I've probably been a guest on the show with you two 20 times, and
you're a fan favorite.
This is the first time that I had to send Mark a text message that said, "Holy guacamole. Like, what did you guys just have me watch?" That being said...
You cleaned up your language for the show.
Yeah, yeah. No, I texted him guacamole, and he was like, "Gee willikers," for sure. But, I personally think that anything that is well lit that you can hear should be at least a 20%. Because the amount of extras in this movie alone each deserve a one millionth of a percentage, which would put us up to 20%.
Making movies is hard.
It's very difficult. But that being said, because we know how the tomato meter works, and we know that that means that 7% of the people actually liked this movie, it's kind of astounding that it has that high of a percentage. But I think this is a little too low. Only because I had such a good time with it.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I will say, look, a couple times my cold, dead heart may have been tugged at. My cold, dead heart wasn't awoken by this movie, but occasionally it snored and it like kind of shivered like it had a dream. So
it's not snored, Mark.
Well, okay. Look, I was having a conversation.
It's a tearjerker a little bit.
Jacqueline, you and I were talking about how good it feels to have a good cry.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that I haven't had a good cry in like 5 years. And I
can help with that.
I'm sure I need somebody in my life that's going to help. Like, I need just a good, and this got me close a couple times, but I don't think it's the movie. I think it's just because I haven't actually cried in so long that I see Robert De Niro in like a hospital bed. And I'm just like, it's just there's so much water backed up in my eyes that something's got to come out. Do you feel, because I feel like Rotten Tomatoes is pretty dead on with 7%.
Absolutely.
I feel bad saying it.
No, it's right. It's absolutely right. Also, as a person that saw this movie, like we just recently did Son-in-Law, where we were talking about like your run of Pauly Shore movies. Mm-hmm. I had a run of Gary Marshall movies, which are movies that don't ask much of you, but they're really fun. They're family friendly.
I mean, this guy, you put that.
You know what I mean? These are blue sky type cinema. And I do enjoy blue sky cinema because the world is dark. And I watch dark movies all the time. This was the movie that made me be like, you know what, Gary? Let it go. Let it go.
I think at this point in his career with Gary Marshall, it's like I appreciated that he's making movies like this, you know, at that stage where I don't necessarily want to see like Labor Day directed by David Fincher. Like, I don't need that kind of movie. Sometimes we just want to put on stuff there's a reason why cotton candy is very popular at the state fair.
Yeah.
It's just nice and fluffy and it's fun to put in our mouths and we do feel a little sick afterwards, but we knew that was going to happen going into it.
And we knew this was going to happen, not this bad.
But there is something impressive about the fact that it did cause each of us to have an extreme reaction. Like, it was not a boring movie.
No.
You didn't watch this and think like, snooze fest, despite the fact that your heart apparently was snoring.
My heart
was snoring.
Yeah.
You know, that there was my jaw was actually on the ground for some of this. I had my little sister watch this with me, and she was like, why would you ever do that to me? Halfway through, she said, this is horrible. But by the end, I looked over, I swear to you, she was crying. She was crying. And I honestly felt it too, because you, for some reason, you're invested in these characters, probably because you know the actors and probably because you love the actors. Like you with the Robert De Niro one, it is sad to see him in a hospital bed. That's Robert De Niro.
It's Robert De Niro.
That's yeah. the problem with this movie, is the movie rests so much of what works on it on the charisma of its leads and the fact that it was a TikTok movie before TikTok, because we're just cutting from scene to scene. And so it's sort of like episodic in the sense that you're like, well, I need to know what happened with this one. And you know, they're all connected. So you're just waiting till the moment that you figure out that this person knows that person and this person used to bang that person. Like, you're just waiting for
that it. That sounds like a very good critical review on the negative side of this movie. And so that's what we're going to transition into now. I'm not going to put the onus on Jacqueline or Roxy to actually give us a synopsis. Can you guys think of a storyline that you want to give a synopsis for?
Robert De Niro nearly dies.
Okay.
Katherine Heigl is insufferable, starting the trend of her doing that in film. And Halle Berry literally plays a nurse, which I was like, you're going to get Halle Berry. Like, that nurse gets wifed up in year one. There's not a doctor that lets that nurse just be a nurse.
That's very fair.
Sarah Jessica Parker is Cinderella.
Okay.
And her daughter is learning the tragedy that is teenagehood.
Oh, yeah.
Very good storylines. I will simply say on top of that, that Hillary Swank has a ball to drop and we're not sure if it's going to happen. So,
and Ludacris is clearly supposed to be her lover. Why are we playing? Like, that bothered me.
I forgot what was Seth Meyers was in it, but he didn't have a romantic.
He's having a baby.
He's having the pregnancy. That's
but
what it
then
was.
Then he gives away $25,000 because he felt bad.
Yeah.
He won that fair and square. That was ridiculous.
And that was before he got the late night hosting gig. So
yeah.
Not sure he if was they had a lot of funds to spare there.
Trying to pay the bills.
We
the
are going to turn it
said.
Over to our buddy who pays the bills by being our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. He is Tim Ryan. And this is a segment where Tim's going to tell us what the critics were saying at the time of the release of New Year's Eve. Given that tomato meter, I have a feeling I know which way this is going. 2 minutes with Tim.
2 minutes with Tim.
Over his long and distinguished career, director Gary Marshall wasn't necessarily a critical darling. But movies like Beaches, Pretty Woman, and The Princess Diaries remain popular favorites to millions of people. But give him a secular holiday, a bunch of movie stars, a whole lot of cliches, and a big dollop of schmaltz, and critics are in a less than celebratory mood. New Year's Eve, which we are discussing today, is rotten at 7% on the tomato meter with 142 reviews, and it has a 45% audience score. And just for comparison, Valentine's Day from 2010 is rotten at 18%, and Mother's Day from 2016 is rotten at 8%. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Lisa Kennedy of the Denver Post wrote, "The only thing that can inspire more cynicism than a holiday's coerced emotions may be a film that both exploits and celebrates said emotions." However, in a fresh review, Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly called it, "a movie I often found myself laughing at in ridicule, and one that also gave me a lump in the throat. So I guess you could say I had a good time." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Shallow, sappy, and dull, New Year's Eve assembles a star-studded cast for no discernible purpose." So that's New Year's Eve. And I want our listeners to know that if the movies have any predictive powers, then we can expect 2024 to be just like A Boy and His Dog, The 13th Floor, and Highlander 2, The Quickening.
That was great,
Tim. That was great.
I like the predictive future of the 2024s that we've already witnessed. What I like more, and I think it tickled Roxy's funny bone as well, is Tim's line, "a dollop of schmaltz."
It's more than a dollop.
Like, you're at a confection store, you're getting your ice cream, and it's just, oh, would you like a dollop? Like, I feel like that's something Willy Wonka and Oompa Loompa would offer us.
And that's the right word for it, sappy.
Yep.
Sappy.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with some sap. I'll take the tree and I'll tap it, give me all the sap.
Hey, and by the way, I'm the intended audience for this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this was...
You read a lot of those, dare I say, a dollop of schmaltz and a heaping helping of...
Schmutz.
Seedy.
Yeah.
With those romance novels you read.
Smut and smaltz are like, I'm with it. I'm so with it. But this one, I need more. And unfortunately, I do feel this was the cast where the names got too unwieldy. Like, the amount of names got too unwieldy.
I have a point to make on that. And that's why we have movie talk. That's why we have a whole section dedicated to, actually talking about the movie, something that producer Brian cleverly titled Movie Talk. Not to take Brian's shine away, but that's actually Producey Lucy came up with Movie Talk. So,
yeah. Producey Lucy.
Yep, she's doing great. We love our some Lucy. We love our some Brian. Not so much New Year's Eve, but the thing
speak
that,
for yourself.
Like, okay, this was your first time seeing it?
Yes.
Okay. Because I saw it in the theater. Jacqueline, did you have to see this? Did you see it in the theater? Because
no,
you thought it might be in your wheelhouse?
No. I did not see this one in the theater because this one was definitely early Rotten Tomatoes days, and how bad it was definitely scared me away from it in the theater. But I definitely watched it immediately when it came home, and it was like, no. Also, 2011 was a weird time for me. It's one of you ever have those years where you're just like, I know I didn't watch movies at this time.
What was going on? Let's get into it.
I'm not going to talk about that boy. We're not going to talk about that boy.
I just wanted to hear the sentence end with boy.
No,
that's all I wanted
to hear. We're not
going
to talk about that boy, but there was moments.
I do go through periods in my existence and my career where, like, I really want to go see a movie every week. And then there's other times when, like, even during, and it kind of was nice that it coincided with the actors and writers and us being on strike. But it's like, I didn't feel like, I saw Barbie and I saw Oppenheimer. And then I was like, I'm going to go get invested in movies again once the strikes are over. And once Always Lola comes out on VOD. So those were my two kind of benchmarks. But back in this time in 2011, Roxy, I was seeing movies 3, 4, 5 times a week, partially because of Schmoes and partially just because I just loved going to the movies and eating popcorn. And so this one, I wasn't dreading it. You know, it had enough. That's the thing about these movies. They have so many stars in them that you're bound to hit 3 or 4 that you really like as a viewer. So was there any optimism going into this viewing experience for you? Was it based on somebody in the movie or just based on the premise?
I mean, of course I tried to be optimistic going in, but it has been over a decade since this movie came out, and I have not heard one positive thing from anybody. Maybe that's why I actually didn't despise my time watching it, because I thought it was going to be boring, lame, and instead, while we spent no more than 5 minutes with any character, there was no development done at all. The storylines were absolutely egregious, and I spent the entire time just trying to guess who ultimately was going to end up hooking up in the end, only to be completely shocked when Michelle Pfeiffer gets dipped by frat boy.
Zac Efron.
Yeah.
That was so rude to Zac Efron. I'm so sorry that I just blanked on.
Oh, I forgot about Zac Efron.
Because he's such a little cutie. I can't even help myself in this. I was like, if I'm Michelle Pfeiffer, I'm fluttering. I'm flying.
If I'm Zac Efron, I'm fluttering. That's Michelle Pfeiffer.
100%. You're right. Michelle Pfeiffer is maybe the most beautiful woman that's ever lived. So
cosign.
Both of them. Although they had no chemistry. And what was that kiss? Bizarre. But anyway, as I'm watching it, I'm invested in all of this. So going into it, I didn't have much hope, and it actually passed my expectations of that 7%. Was there a character that stood out to me? The only one that I really feel like really touched me was Lil Miss Sunshine.
Abigail Breslin.
Yep.
Yeah, because relatable. I mean, when we see her, finally, she's defied her mother. She's gotten on the train. She goes to Times Square. Everybody's having an easy time navigating Times Square.
Stared her mom in the face.
In the face. Didn't pick up her call. Yep. She said no. She gets there and she sees the guy she likes make it out with another girl. Brutal. I mean, been there. Devastating. And I honestly, in that moment, was like, okay, I get what this movie was going for. There's a little storyline for each person that you're supposed to relate to. And that was my one. I related to the teen story.
See, okay, you had an issue with couple of these.
No, I just have a question. Where was this in Zac Efron's High School Musical filmography?
This was post-High School Musical, okay?
But the trilogy or
So he's growing out of the High School Musical
thing.
That's
the only thing I
wanted to know. He took some roles. There was like that DJ movie he did that was just kind of ridiculous, like We Are Your Friends or something like that.
But before that, he did 17.
17 again.
That's where I want to know is where was this with 17 again?
Because I think it was just after 17, if I'm not mistaken. But
it was.
But I thought Zac Efron was one of the highlights of this movie.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He's so endearing.
He wasn't the guy I was going in to the movie rooting for. But just to see him kind of get out of the high school thing just a little bit and be somebody who's now, it felt like this was this guy's first time on his own in his life, in the character's life. And so he was making some decisions that maybe he wouldn't have made 6 months, a year, 2 years ago.
Yes.
And back when he was in high school. And so that was kind of cool. And yeah. I love Michelle Pfeiffer being happy.
Yeah, but the most egregious moment of the entire movie had to do with him. I couldn't believe that this was something that actually took place. He's on the phone with his homie, probably Ashton Kutcher, right? And we haven't even talked about Lea Michele in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
The elevator stuff. He's on the phone with Ashton Kutcher, and next to him is Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, they are like a stone's throw away. They are the distance between us right now. And he's on the phone and he's like, yeah, this girl is totally whack, you know? And then she hears it and he's shocked. I mean, she is literally an arm's length away from him. And he was like, oh, I didn't know you heard that. She's in the same room. She's right there. What kind of that was the most bizarre direction choice I've ever seen. Just have him not know she's there. He knew she was there. He took her there. He's looking at her. He says it. And then he's like, how'd you hear that? I was like, you gotta be kidding me. What just happened there?
I give him credit because it was 2011. And, you know, back then we were still screaming into our phones. Like we didn't have all the buds and all that stuff.
No.
So we were talking. We were loud talkers back in the day.
On those cell phones, yeah.
She would have heard if he was whispering. She was right there.
I agree. He dropped the ball.
But that was also back when, like, that was like not a rarity, but enough of a rarity. Back in 2007 was when we got the iPhone, right?
Yeah.
That was enough of a rarity at that time.
And then this was 2011, so you should know, like, I think we had ditched the Blackberries by then.
Yeah.
But that was one of the more memorable storylines, I would say, is the Zac Efron, Michelle Pfeiffer dynamic. And the thing that ended up bothering me about this movie the most, ironically, Jacqueline, you touched on it, is that there's too many storylines. There's too many things. It's almost like... it's like a spoiled kid at Christmas. You come downstairs and you're looking at and there's just too many presents. Like you're never going to feel attachment to any of these presents because there's so much crap. There's so many. I don't need this many famous people. I think that's the genius of a movie like Love Actually, which I've made fun of and criticized certain storylines because they're very ridiculous. But I think Love Actually has just the right amount of different things going on to connect.
It's perfect.
Whereas this, it's like trying to one up Love Actually with more storylines and more stars. And it got to be the point where it might have been Lea Michele, and it just might have been the time of the movie, but I could not stomach one more famous person coming in here and having yet another storyline that I had to keep track of in my brain. And then I think it was her showing up in the elevator. And I'm like, this is too many A-listers, goddammit.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So this is the thing that I can appreciate now watching this movie is I know how this movie gets made, the way that it gets made, is these are all New York actors. And when they said, hey, we're going to film this in New York, you can go home to your kids every night.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like Valentine's Day. So you're going to be a part of a movie with other likable people. Look, we got Halle Bailey already on it. We got Robert De Niro already on it. We got these other people on it. Then they all join.
They're not saying no to Gary Marshall.
You know what I... Well, it's not just Gary Marshall. It's the other people that sign on. I guarantee you the first person he gets to say yes is Robert De Niro. Maybe shortly after that, he gets Michelle Pfeiffer. Maybe Hilary Swank.
He gets your Oscar contenders.
You know what I mean?
By the way, producer Brian did tell me John Lithgow was nominated for two Oscars.
Okay, because you both rolled your eyes at me, and I feel like
I didn't know that.
I said he should have been nominated for Orange County. Sadly, he was not.
What was he nominated?
Terms of Endearment and The World According to Garp.
That World According to Garp.
So he had a good run there.
That is a good run there.
And he's still going.
But that's my whole point is that the idea that, like, once you get those people to sign on, other people are willing to sign on to it. It did get a bit unwieldy. I went and checked Valentine's Day has about half of this cast. And they're all intertwined. And the other thing I will say about the Valentine's Day cast, just comparing it to this one, these are all great people. Not necessarily the personalities that you're thinking of when you're thinking of people like Jamie Foxx, people like Jennifer Garner, people like Topher Grace, people like Anne Hathaway. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. these were names at the time that not were just popular. People loved them. People obsessed about them. And people had that sort of like internet boyfriend energy. These are all more established people that we like. But I love Carla Gugino. I don't know if I'm like rushing to see every movie that she's in, but you tell me that there's a movie with Jamie Foxx, I'm gonna go see it.
Yeah, I kind of feel you on that and I absolutely understand how it was made. I mean, I would have cut off my arm to be in a movie with any of these individuals.
Sure.
Like, so I, why wouldn't you sign on to it? And it's not like being in this movie demoed their careers. Not like after this, Robert De Niro was having a hard time getting work and he just didn't know what to do. But I actually, going back to what you were talking about, Mark, where there's so many names on here, that wasn't the most egregious thing to me. The most egregious part to me was what they did with those people. Like, for example, I'm sorry, I know we love Jon Bon Jovi here, and I don't want to say anything.
Yes,
and
we do.
His performance was really fine. He did a totally fine job with it.
But, his performance was really fine.
Yeah, no, he did actually a decent actor. So
He was better in U571.
Yes.
Right, but he did a fine job. But Katherine Heigl, the whole premise of their storyline is that he treats her like crapola. Mm-hmm. He leaves her after proposing to her. And then he gets her this job that he doesn't tell her that he gets. She thinks she's done it on her own merit. And she didn't. And then he says, I'll be with you forever. And we're supposed to be like, it's on like Donkey Kong. Yeah, we're in on this. That it was every storyline was like that. Like, I'm not rooting for you guys to be together. So that's an issue. Same thing with Michelle Pfeiffer and Zac Efron. Zac Efron was a complete D-bag the entire time to her, behind her back, and then at the end kisses her and is like, now it's all better, right? And she's like, yay, I got all my accomplishments. Like, every single storyline, even the Sarah Jessica Parker storyline, where it's like, okay, so you didn't want your kid going out, but now you were like, actually, it's getting close to midnight, so I should go meet up with that man that I gave my number to a year ago.
Wow.
And just let my kid gallivant around as a teenager after midnight, even though I didn't want her out before midnight. And then she's there, and it's like, oh, but we're happy because she changed out of the clogs. Like, what are we talking about? It wasn't the who was in it. It was the storylines that they asked us to root for were unrootable, inrootable, absolutely not rootable. There was no rooting for any of the things that were going on. I was like, give me somebody that I want this love story, that I want them to get together, that I want them to succeed in whatever way. And for an entire movie to be called New Year's Eve and us to not deal with resolutions at all. Like, what about talking about being a better person? Are any of you guys going to talk about what you want to do next year? Instead, you guys had a bucket list for this year. That's not what New Year's Eve is.
That was just a delightful.
I see this upset you.
Well,
you just carve out that minute and a half, and that's pretty much what the premise of this show was. That's the promise that the show just lived up to.
Yeah. Thank you for giving me that time, that moment, that soapbox, because I really genuinely had feelings on this.
So, I mean, again, I'm looking at this and I'm trying to think, based to your point, who was I actually rooting for? Were there people I actually cared about other than the fact that I like them as famous people? Obviously, I'm rooting for Jon Bon Jovi to do whatever he wants to do with his life. OK, if he wants to go on tour and keep being a rock star, go ahead and do it. If he wants to cancel the tour so he can be with Katherine Heigl, knock yourself out, dude. I want you to be happy. I was actually rooting for Hector Elizondo's character, Kaminsky, because he's sort of he's what it all comes down to on New Year's Eve, because there's a mechanical malfunction with the ball, as all the high school boys snicker, including myself, and we can't get the ball to go up, can't get the ball to drop. So, and this is kind of Hilary Swank's, like, her whole job, her whole career has been building up to this moment, so you really got to stick the landing. So we call this one guy Kaminsky, Elizondo, who gets in there, and he's the only electrician in the whole city who's going to know how to figure out what's
semi-retired.
Wrong.
He's got to find the one light.
He gets in there, and you think it's going to be like this intense Lethal Weapon 3 opening, cut the right wire, see, and he just kind of goes in there and fixes it, and it's pretty much a piece of cake.
Yeah.
We don't really sweat it after that. I can't really think of any other storyline.
I mean, not De Niro. De Niro. De Niro is the only one.
Okay. I cared about him and I teared up about him because he's basically this old man who, I'm sorry, Roxy, he may not have to make any resolutions. Let's put it that way. And it turns out that he is the father of Hilary Swank's character and he's been a pretty crummy dad. So that's why I didn't care about him as much as the movie went on, is because he was not the best dad up to that point.
Oh, and that's like that's a mortal sin for you. That is a mortal sin for Mark Ellis. You don't want to be a dad, but bad dads are the ones that you will crucify over anybody.
I just don't think that you get, if your daughter wants to come and watch the ball drop with you on your deathbed, fine. But it's like, you don't deserve that.
100%. I was not rooting for him. We hear him sit down with Halle Berry, who for some reason he thinks is his.
And see, this is what I'm saying. Y'all didn't tell me why I was rooting for him. I was rooting for him because of Halle Bailey, because of Halle Berry. Because if you know anything about Robert De Niro, I think the reason why Robert De Niro signed up for this movie is Gary Marshall said, you will get to act next to Halle Berry. And if you don't know Robert De Niro's dating history, I think that's the reason why he signed up. So that was the reason why I was rooting for him.
That
I
made
was
you rooting root for him?
Not him, the character. Root for Robert De Niro. Like, I'm not rooting for his character. I'm rooting for Robert De Niro getting to flirt on screen with Halle Berry for the entire runtime of this movie. That is what I was rooting
for. I think that's completely fair. And you know what? As we were watching it, I was thinking to myself, you know how sometimes you'll play that game that's like 6 degrees of separation and you're trying to connect two different actors? And I was thinking, I'm going to remember this moment that Robert De Niro and Halle Berry are in this death scene on his deathbed right now, because this will help connect all the actors that have ever been.
Yeah. I am not above saying that I think that Gary Marshall might have had a bad experience in the mid-2000s playing the popular game, 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. I think he probably, maybe he lost to Penny Marshall and he was mad about it. So he said, God damn it, I'm going to make not just one, I'm going to make a trilogy of movies that have literally every famous person in them ever. So I never have to lose 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon again, because you're finding all the degrees in this movie.
I mean, I forgot about some other people in this. Amari Stoudemire's in this one.
Yep.
That's the other thing that is in this one. But yeah, no, the Halle.
He was playing for the Knicks at the time.
That's what I'm saying. They just got people in New York. Other thing about this movie, you could just tell how it was a Frankenstein shoot. Like, you can tell Halle and Robert De Niro were together, but so many people in this movie, they were never near each other. All the phone calls, like, it's just, these people never spoke to each other. They didn't even know each other. They probably didn't even meet each other at the premiere.
I feel like there's more stunt casting in this one.
Yes.
Because in Valentine's Day, the stunt cast was, at the time, Taylor Swift. It was like, oh, Taylor Swift is like her first, I think it was her first theatrical
movie. Her first big theatrical movie,
And it was her, it was the Taylors, her
and Taylor. It was the Taylors,
And this one, even though it's more established actors, it felt like...
Who's in New York that can say yes?
Everybody is there. And I think the promise that Gary made them all when they were cast is you do not have to study your lines at all. You can literally look at this the day of.
Make it up.
And that's how you separate, you know, John Bon Jovi, he can be a pretty good actor, versus the Robert De Niro, who can do an Oscar caliber role in his sleep.
Oh, and they wanted to make sure we got Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker to do their first movie together since maybe the 80s?
I don't know that they...
Didn't they do a movie together in the 80s?
They might have done a movie in the 80s, but it was kind of fun seeing Matthew Broderick's character show up, knowing that Sarah Jessica Parker's in the movie already.
And they're married, yeah. I mean, I just figured that was like a part of the I'm thinking of the pitches for this, because this is the movie that happened that eventually led to the, remember the movie 43? Remember that movie?
Movie 43, yeah.
It was this team-up comedy movie that literally got everyone from like Richard Gere to Chris Pratt, Halle Berry,
Hugh Jackman.
What year are we talking?
Around this time.
2012, 2013.
Yeah, but
it was basically a bunch of short vignettes that were all meant to be comedic.
So this.
Meant being the key word.
The movie 43 was trying to be raunchy.
Yes.
And just kind of gross out. It was never about finding the heart or finding the good in things or like having these tentacles kind of wrap up cutely. It was just about and they had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
So it was like, here's 10 minutes of Hugh Jackman and he's got balls on his chin.
Yeah.
Here's 10 minutes of Richard Gere doing whatever. Here's 10. So I think that might be 0%.
But these movies killed that. Mm-hmm. This was like back when these producers could tell these lies to get these people to sign up for it. Be like, it's just 2 days.
Yeah.
Come in, do your thing. But this is part of it. How easy can you make it for the stars? Shoot it in New York. And then also, who else is in it that where if this is embarrassing, they'll be embarrassed too.
I need another moment from you guys, if you will.
Get back on that soapbox.
I got to talk to you guys about Lea Michele in this movie. I just want to go down this path for a second.
So she's stuck in an elevator with Ashton Kutcher.
Kriegley.
That's how, for about half the movie.
Yes. But she is a backup singer to Jon Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to Lea Michele in this movie is that she drops a bracelet in the elevator that we never reference, that has no relevance to absolutely anything. She then is out of the elevator and is able to somehow make it to Times Square in time for what she needed to do, the backup singing. Okay, meanwhile, Ashton Kutcher, who's been stuck on an elevator for hours, gets right back on the elevator that he was just stuck on with 50 more people. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, but let's follow Lea Michele still. So then Lea Michele does get there, and she's like, oh, but it's just such a bummer because I want to be the star of the show. Mm. Somehow, Ashton Kutcher gets through Jon Bon Jovi's security and gets there and is able to kiss her because he's the drummer. He makes up that he's the drummer. Nobody ID'd him. He goes through all of Times Square. Okay, great. Still with you guys. Mm-hmm. He gives her this bracelet, and he's like, because I know that this could mean something. Balance. All right. Ridiculous premise. Fine. Still with you guys. She gets on stage, and she's backup singing, the thing that she's there to do. Okay, still with you guys. Jon Bon Jovi leaves the show. He leaves the show, and somehow what they say is, you know your new backup singer? Actually, she's going to perform on New Year's Eve. Everybody who came here to see you, no, it's fine. Just leave in the middle of your show to go make out with a girl that you left because after you proposed to her, you were too much of a D-bag to actually stay with her. So then somehow Rachel Berry, Lea Michele, gets on stage and sings. She's the singer of the show.
At midnight.
Asinine. Like, you guys had me, you had me. She's the star of the show. She got, and she's like, and I did it. Who? Everybody with thrown tomatoes, rotten tomatoes, get off the stage. Who are you, you backup singer? I've been standing out in the cold in the 7-degree temperature, the same as the Rotten Tomatoes score of this movie, for 15 hours. Like, just, and everybody's like, yay!
They were a very supportive New York crowd.
You don't know New Yorkers if you think that that was even close to how they would have reacted to this no-name balance bracelet girl. Just, that was ridiculous.
I mean, you can go. You don't have to go any further than ask Amari Stoudemire how New York fans feel when they feel like they're not getting the product that they expected, that they paid for.
And the ball is broken.
Or on the stage.
And the ball is broken.
And the ball's broken.
It's a faulty ball.
The one thing I do know from this movie, and I do remember it, it was partially paid by the New York Tourism Board.
Oh.
Okay. That is an aspect of this movie that's interesting, and I think it's well done, and I'm sure there's a bunch of footage that they actually shot on New Year's. They might even film some scenes leading up to New Year's.
Probably, filmed it, captured it or whatever, or like took it from like Dick's Rocking Eve, captured the B-roll from that and then put it in there. But yeah, this was partially paid by the New York Tourism Board because this is not like post 9/11, that was 2011, but it was still in that, like, New York wasn't coming back from the financial crisis.
10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Housing crisis just happened.
Yeah.
We had no such thing as COVID or anything like that yet. So the question is, does a movie like this make you feel like you want to go to New York to see the ball drop in Times Square more?
No.
Or less? It was never really a thing that I ever wanted to do. And I feel like as I become more curmudgeonly with every passing month and year that I like to do less things. And I don't think that New York when watching the ball drop is going to be one of them, because I'm watching this movie and I just see all these storylines and I don't really see myself in any of these storylines. So I'm like, I don't think that I need to be a guy who watches the ball drop.
I hate this about myself, but this made me want to go more because what I know as somebody who grew up in Boston, which is 3.5 hours away from New York City, what I know is that I have plenty of friends who have gone there that wear diapers because you cannot leave to go pee, that it is below freezing. They are shaking, crying. They're so cold. I know the reality of waiting there is miserable. But watching this, they were also happy.
No.
They were all like, you know what? That was a beautiful speech, Hillary Swank. Thank you for telling us that this is the reason the ball is broken is so that we can all reflect on our lives and take this pause. And I was like, that is really, really beautiful. This is romanticized New Year's Eve, New York City in a way that is not real. And if this was the experience, then I would go. If it looked like it was about 40 degrees. All right, great. I can stand 40 degrees. I can stand there and just lovey-dovey with my friends. So yeah. It made me want to go more. I don't think it's real.
It's not. Okay, so it's not real, but you want to go to that idealized
world. Do not give me that look right now.
Have you been to Times Square for New Year's Eve?
No. Jacqueline? First of all, Times Square is amateur hour. Like, it is amateur hour.
They have an Olive Garden.
Anybody out? Yes, they have an Olive Garden. They don't even have a TGI Fridays anymore. Closed.
RIP. I used to eat there.
Yeah, it's closed. Yeah. No, It is amateur hour. The only version of New York Times Square that I could do is the bougie version where you get somebody's hotel room or park or apartment
yeah.
that overlooks the ball, that you could be at their bougie little party to overlook the ball drop and wave to the peasants and like not be anywhere near, like still be inside a domicile that is not related to that insanity.
Brian, how's our budget looking for next year? Because I feel like we close out. We'll talk about either Mother's Day or Valentine's Day. We'll have Roxy on as the guest. We'll, the four of us will all go in, not on any of our dimes, on like a nice, you know, get some high-rise hotel
yeah.
that overlooks the ball. That's the way to do New York. Because you know what you can do in your hotel room, or what I could do in the comfort of my own home that I can't do it at Times Square, is I can just walk to the fridge and get a beer.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the concession situation is like. That's what it all boils down to. I'm happy wearing the diaper, okay?
No, you're not.
I'm happy wearing a diaper.
Not after you use it.
I'm gonna be some liquid courage up by then. I need to know where I can get hot dogs. I need to know where I can get, like, a beer or soda.
They do have vendors down there, but it's like going to, like, Woodstock 99. It's, like, $200 for, you know, to eat the food. Look, the Macy's Day Parade, that sort of thing, like, the outdoor adventures, like, I'm not mm-hmm. about it. Also, I will say this. There are a ton of amazing New Year's Eve movies that just pummel this one, including one of my all-time favorites, The Apartment. There's also 200 Cigarettes. There's just so many other different ways to do New Year's
Sleepless
Eve.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle.
But they're not called New Year's Eve, so when you type it in, it might not necessarily show up. This is for lazy people.
And like, as a person who is actually a fan of not New Year's Eve as most people celebrate it, but New Year's Eve the way I celebrate it, at home with friends, like doing it my own sort of way, any movie that doesn't talk about how awful this holiday is really deeply does not really, should not be called it. And there's like people that are kind of—
explain yourself.
Like this movie—
You hate New Year's Eve?
It's amateur hour. It is amateur hour. It is not a night for people that are good with drinking, driving, or socializing. It is a night for amateurs who need designated holidays to tell them when to do things. I'm not saying that,
baby,
like—
Baby, I'm an amateur then. I love me some New Year's Eve.
And you're not the only one. In fact, our
well,
previous—
Well, what is it about New yeah. Year's Eve that you— Because we've heard Jacqueline's sort of reasons for keeping it on the shelf as far as your favorite holidays go. What is it about New Year's Eve that inspires Roxy? Why do you get up for this night? Yeah. Is it the promise of the future that we didn't really get to talk about much in this movie?
Yeah, I don't think it's for amateurs, although respect everything that you believe.
I mean, no. I shouldn't say everyone who goes out on New Year's Eve is an amateur, but there's a lot of amateurs out on New Year's
Eve. I definitely hear you. And, you know, there's always going to be like that frat star mentality of the person who's trying to kiss somebody at midnight because they think that that will somehow be, I don't know, big points for them, brownie yeah. points. But for me, as somebody who is single and lives alone, I love any excuse to celebrate. And this one especially focuses on being a better version of yourself, or at least that's what it's supposed to focus on. Now, do I think that our society is hysterical that what you do the day before you're about to start your resolutions is get out and get absolutely plastered? Mm. Like the ritual is, I'm going to get as drunk as I can so tomorrow I wake up with a hangover to be the best version of me that I could ever be. It's ridiculous what we do. But at the same time, I love resolutions. I'm a big goal-oriented person. I love my birthday for that reason. I love this holiday for that reason. Anything that's kind of a reset. And going into a new year does bring promise, especially if you've had a crap previous year, whether it's a mental shift or what. I think that it has no religious affiliations, which for me, coming after Christmas, is usually like, get me out of here. Get me out of here. Sorry, not that I'm so happy anybody who loves Christmas, but it's just like, you know,
it's as a Jewish person, yeah. you're like, I'm inundated with it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, we don't live in a Christian nation and yet everything's shut down. So I'm like, I just wanted to go to CVS and get some nail polish. Like, can it be open? But anyway, you know, New Year's, everybody can celebrate it. It's a
non-secular kind of like holiday where I do appreciate the resolution aspect of New Year's. Now, we can all agree New Year's Day should be January 2nd.
Because for sure.
What I do on New Year's Eve is, regardless of whether I had an early night or a late night, which I've done plenty of both in my career, then you wake up the next day, you order pizza, you watch nothing but college football bowl games all day, and then you figure out what your next year is going to be like.
Mm.
Before we get out of here, though, we talked about the movie enough. We probably talked about the movie more than anybody else has ever talked about the movie.
In a positive way, anyway.
Including the folks making it while they were making it.
Facts.
New Year's memories? Do we have, like, highlights, lowlights? What's been, like, a beautiful, a crazy, a nutty
A nutty New Year's
Eve. New Year's Eve. I kissed, my first kiss was on a New Year's Eve.
Okay.
In high school.
Your first kiss ever? I waited.
First kiss ever, yeah.
Wow.
And it didn't take place till like 4 a.m. Like, I had to work, man.
So what happens after midnight in your soul? Are you thinking, I blew it?
No, we weren't necessarily like meant to be together. It wasn't like I'm going to this party for this girl so I can kiss her at midnight. It was just like everybody's hanging out, having a good time. And then we all finally pair off, time to sleep in a bed. And it's like, well, I guess I drew you. And we're just like, we were friends. We're just talking. And then, like, you know, a kiss happened. It was, you know, good. It was a good initiation to, you know, being an adult in a relationship. But I also have gotten to ring in the New Year on stage a bunch. And that's like cool. At the Comedy Store, I was last week. And that's always fun. You know, whether it's amateurs or whether it's professional New Year's Eve partiers in the crowd, it's always, always, always a fun time. Jacqueline.
I think my favorite New Year's Eve was the year that I spent in Thailand on my, and I think that I knew you when I was on those trips. It was my single solo travel girl adventures. And I still, like, I love being in a couple with that man that lives in my house. But I will say, like, going to Southeast Asia and, like, really, like, really traveling over there and, like, spending New Year's Eve, like, it was literally, like, we took a, what do you call, like, those rickshaws out to the middle of nowhere. And, like, I was just a bunch of partiers. It felt very Leonardo DiCaprio on the beach.
Was it, like, their version of Burning Man or something like
that? No, it was just really just, like, a bunch of, like, you know, people celebrating for the holiday. And we all sort of made, like, a beach New Year's Eve party, basically. You know what I mean? Like, it was very DIY and having that sort of adventure. Other thing I love about New Year's Eve, and I will... a testament to this for sure. New Year's Eve has the better music because then you have "What Are You Doing New Year's?" New Year's Eve, that song, and "Auld Lang Syne." Like, I feel like they're
Prince,
better.
Prince, 1999.
Yeah, like I feel like the New Year's Eve movie and the New Year's Eve music of the holiday music is the best music. Also secular, always fun. I love New Year's Eve movies.
You too, New Year's Day. You kind of squeeze in.
I
there,
love New Year's Day as well. Yeah. And then I like several movies I like to watch on New Year's Day. And also, that is when in Britain they call it Boxing Day. The day after New Year's is Boxing Day. And they do lots of sales and lots of television shows that are just built for Boxing Day that sort of like wrap up the year. So I love year in review type stuff.
And that's why we have college football bowl games.
Yeah.
So it's their season in review.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming to me last because I had so much time to think about it, and I am coming up completely blank regardless.
But you like to party on New Year's.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, do I remember all my New Year's?
It's such a great time.
No, I've spent New Year's Eve in Los Angeles, in New York, in Boston, and I've never had a bad New Year's Eve. None of them stand out. I just usually like to spend it with friends, having a few drinks, making some resolutions, and calling it. Like, that's really what every year looks like. It doesn't really matter. I've been with different people. Sometimes I've had a nice little kiss. Sometimes I have not. and it doesn't really matter to me because it's the start of a new year. And that's kind of why I like it, not because of a one experience that I've had.
You and I did New Year's together one time.
You did?
At it was either the Mint or the Dime. I get them confused. During the pandemic,
oh my gosh,
when we couldn't do stand-up, I was doing those virtual stand-up shows where I'd have some, you know, some fun folks open, and then I do an hour of just material that I thought was funny, but there's no crowd there. And so I think producer Brian might have been involved in a couple of those, right? Doing the audio engineering, just like to, and so I live streamed. It wasn't just me performing.
Oh, I remember
myself.
These live streams.
I live streamed, and like, you know, you get hundreds of people watching because that's the entertainment. And so Roxy and Steph Sabra of World Girls fame and this show, you guys came over because your
place
at the time.
I lived within walking distance of there at the time.
Yeah, so they walked over just in time for midnight, and like everybody like had a nice cocktail, and like we did a Q&A. Roxy popped in. It was fun.
That was nice. really nice because we hadn't seen each other in so long, and usually
it was the pandy. Yeah,
yeah, it was. The good old Pandy.
The good old Pandy.
Pandy Express.
As I'm thinking about it, honestly, I just really, really like this holiday. I really like this holiday.
But the movie, not so much.
The movie, I don't think, did the holiday justice. It didn't have any of the things about the holiday that I liked.
It felt very chaotic and frenzied, which you can get on New Year's sometimes, but you usually, at least in this point, I would rather stay away from chaotic and frenzy and frenzied. I like maybe a couple Coors Lights and the Twilight Zone. Because they on New Year's Eve, they do a Twilight Zone marathon.
They do.
Who does?
I think it's USA.
Your apartment.
I think it's, and my apartment does. So, and now, and I just, well, I cut the cord, but and I have YouTube TV now and I still get all the stuff.
As YouTube TV is not really the cord cutting, but.
They don't sponsor us, but my God, YouTube TV has been a godsend.
YouTube TV is amazing also because unlimited downloads. So you can like DVR everything. They can't max out
NFL Sunday Ticket, yeah. Which maybe not that necessary for folks like Roxy and I this year, but.
I can't, Mark. Oh, my God.
You're not loving the Mac Jones era? Sorry.
Are there people loving the Mac Jones era? I mean, the fact that I watched a game with my family and everybody was booing when we actually were winning. I mean, we need that draft pick. Come on.
I want y'all to get good. I want y'all to stay bad because I cannot allow the Bears to stay bad and take that top spot.
Yep,
and like, yep. I cannot allow Kay Williams to be in our division while Jordan Love is still developing.
It could happen. We're going to go to outro, but I want everybody to stick around because now that Roxy's sad and bitter about the New England Patriots, I got something that's going to cheer her up. Okay. Hit the music. No mailbag this week. You can email us anytime, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com, and let us know what movie should we be talking about. Do you want us to cover Valentine's Day? Do you want Brian to spring for a nice hotel suite, New York City, December 31st, so we can do our much-anticipated review of Mother's Day, and we'll watch the ball drop as we do it. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. I know last week everybody was sharing what they listened to on Spotify, and I've seen a lot of people say that Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong is one of your favorite podcasts that you've listened to, and it's one of the most listened to. I've gotten a lot of messages like that. So thank you all for continuing to support the show and letting us do what we love in this cool new home that we got to welcome Roxy into the new studio for the first time. And what a month you had to close out 2023. I know it was a long time coming and it was just the perfect storm of the strikes and all this stuff. But as somebody who got to see Always Lola on the festival circuit before it was available everywhere, y'all can VOD it now wherever you live. It's got to feel great to finally have this amazing product out there into the world.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, first of all, Mark, you're just like the most supportive friend. And thank you for coming to that because it was...
Where did it premiere at?
We did a film festival circuit. So out here, we did a couple of them, Chinese Theater. I'm back in Boston. I got to do one Boston Film Festival with a bunch of my friends, which was really cool coming through. But it's now available everywhere. And what was cool is because I've been hosting with you guys for a long time, guesting on here for Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody obviously talks about, like, what's the Rotten Tomatoes score? Because I've been a part of this place for so long, to actually be starring in a movie that then people are checking the Rotten Tomatoes score.
100%.
Yeah.
As of this recording.
Giddy up.
It was really cool. It's like this little indie that could, and it's been my dream forever. And I just...
Congrats, man. That's something to be really proud of. Brett Ratner wish he could, man. He wishes that he could. That's amazing.
Is it nerve-wracking seeing the movie at a place like Boston, like where you know you have a bunch of friends and family coming to see it, or you know the movie's good? It's not like you have to perform that night. You already know what the movie is.
No, it's so nerve-wracking because when I walked in, it was a theater of 150 people, and all of them are people who know me, and right. I walked in, and they all started chanting, Lola, Lola. And like, you know, the press is there, NBC is there, people are there, and they're seeing all of my fratty friends out being like, Lola, as I'm walking in. I thought that I was going to die of embarrassment. Also, it was one of the greatest moments of my life. So
that's dope.
It was really, really cool. But it is nerve-wracking because you can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shot that movie 2 years ago. When you're doing stand-up, you can feel the crowd. And if they're not liking something, you can adjust.
You can just shift gears. Yeah, can't really you can do shift. That with a movie that's been
You just
shot.
Hope they do. Otherwise, you have to sit for 90 minutes in a room with them as you feel them. So luckily, people do like it. I think they understand that this is a ultra-low-budget indie movie with a bunch of people who wanted to make a really heartfelt movie about mental health and about a coming-of-age movie about trauma and grief. And it has a really solid message to it. The actors, the ensemble cast, myself excluded from this, are just so effing talented that it was like, I think that people saw what we were trying to do and they really felt something from it.
Felt very Breakfast Club-y. Like, you got Andrew Guy, Candace Cruz, who are both wonderful and talented. They've been on the show as well. So it's kind of like a Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong release as well. And
wow. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you guys made the show.
But the storylines that are going on in your movie are actually like they're they're good and you follow them and you care about these people. New Year's Eve does feel like that comedian who's on stage and is trying this bit and that's not working. So let's pivot to this. Yeah. Let's pivot. Back to John Bon Jovi. Still not working. Let's go here. Robert De Niro. We're sad. Nothing's really working. There's a lot to talk about with this movie. And I think we covered most of it. And always lovely. You can check that out on VOD. Wherever you are, you can check that out now. Finally, enjoy it and let Roxy know. Let us know what you thought of the movie. And Jacqueline, what else we got going on? Next week, we're kind of TBDs. We're keeping it on the down low.
Yeah, we just got back. So we got to figure out exactly what we're going to do for the year. But that's why you guys need to email us in. Let us know what we haven't covered. I mean, we're going deep this year. You never know. We could get deep cuts.
What a great close of the year. I mean, you know, New Year's Eve is fun and we get to talk to Roxy. So we love that. But like The Legend of Billie Jean was really cool. Son-in-Law. We finally got a Pauly Shore movie in here. Legend. Yeah. So let's have a big 2024, folks. And whatever you're doing, whatever walk of life you're in, whether you watch, you listen to the show, thank you. And we got your back too. Whatever your New Year's resolution was, don't quit the gym yet. It's only been a week. You can take a rest day. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's Jacqueline Holy. That's Roxy Stryer. Brian Perez, our esteemed producer for the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes. I am Mark Ellis saying, well, I'll say goodbye in a minute, but also Portland, San Diego, Boston, a couple other tour dates coming up soon. Thanks for listening. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. Thanks for watching us. We love you. Happy New Year.